From deep in the wilds of Pittsfield Township, Michigan, it's the Grace and Paul Pottscast. She's a left-wing conservative Catholic homeschooler who loves to garden. He's a bearded computer geek who reads and writes like he's running out of time. Together, they're raising an ever-growing army of adorkable children and planning the revolution. She's been doing the sound effects.
Yeah.
All righty.
So welcome to the show, Angie. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. No, this is, it's our pleasure. We've been burning and hoping to talk to some millennials. This is like our project for the year.
Yeah.
To talk to millennials and see what's going on for them, what's happening in their lives.
This is our theme for the year. Yeah. Is millennial economics.
Because we started thinking, well, this could help millennials and that could help millennials. And then I started thinking, you know, we should ask them what's going on before we start figuring out, like, what would help.
Yeah, because I'm old, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Gen Xer. I'm 50. And Grace is a few years younger, but she, I think, is still technically in Gen X.
I'm still Gen X, yeah.
Yeah, so I won't say we really feel economically secure, but things were different when I was starting out, and I'm more established in a career than a lot of younger people are.
Things were very different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
just to set some context, I was in my 20s in the 90s.
Yep.
When a number of millennials were born. And I routinely worked temp jobs for a month and then took 3 months off because I'd earned enough money.
Wow. Yeah, I never could do that.
That was like a norm.
Yeah, but you had housemates and you lived with relatives and whatnot.
I had various support structures.
Yeah.
But that was just like I hadn't found a job that I really wanted. I dropped out of grad school. Mm-hmm. I was doing my thing.
I've never felt like there was a time where I felt that I couldn't work full time. There have been a couple times where like I lost a job and felt like I did have enough saved where I felt like I could take at least a week or two breathing space before I rushed out to the unemployment office. But that was just once.
That was one time.
And then, but mostly it's been like you lose a job and suddenly you're in free fall and everything's ramped up to 11. You're desperate.
Yeah.
Anyway, we jumped right in. Let's say what we're doing this week and who our guest is. And
I think I introduced her.
Yep.
And then I framed like what our like thing is with the millennials.
So we're skipping over this week. We're going to skip over our usual walk a week and what we're reading and what we've been watching and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to just
get right to it
because we're a little squeezed for time. And also we didn't prepare very well. I've been joking that the dog ate our homework. The kids ate our homework.
Yeah.
The kids ate our free time this
I think
week.
You should actually just write that into a script and read it along with the intro.
The dog ate our homework. Here we are.
So the question we're asking, and I'll leave it to you, Angie, to take it where you need to go, is, so how's the economy treating you lately?
I think pretty decent for what I know of my other friends.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go the college route when I got married at 19. And I started working a manual labor job, I guess you would call it. I did assembly line work. Mm-hmm. I made really good money. I made $16.53 an hour. And a bunch of my friends went the college route and got out and didn't have a job and were barely making $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already bought a house with my husband and got a mortgage, you know? So I think that, we are on the fair end of it. So that's why I had mentioned to you before is, you know, I feel like a lot of my generation bought into the college, I want to call it college scam, that led a lot of my generation into debt. Mm-hmm. And they were promised jobs and they thought they were going to go out and make, you know, six-figure sums doing computer work. And unfortunately, there's not much computer work. There's not much engineering work. It's not much of a field anymore. I mean, it's like it's overwhelmed and they get mad at the baby boomers and the Generation Xers that are still working it. But hey. Unfortunately, they can't really afford to retire, you know, because it's just the sense of the economy right now. It's messing with everyone, whether you're a millennial, whether you're Generation Xer. So I do sympathize with a lot of people of my generation, but I also am a little ticked with them because I wish that they would go and get trade jobs because that's where the money is. That's where we need people. They're so desperate for people right now. They're willing to pay for your certification and your training to go to school so they can have you. And then you could easily make 30 to 40 an hour, depending on what you do. Mm-hmm. This is the type of stuff that drives me nuts. I'm just like, and that's why we are doing well. My husband and I are doing well because my husband's a trades. He's blue collar. He does HVAC.
HVAC. Okay. And then when did you start working assembly work? Was that like recently?
Yeah. I worked as, you know, like 19, I got a job.
Okay.
And I worked there for 7 years. And then now I'm a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
Because we can afford for me to stay at home. You know, it's tight. We have to budget really carefully. We have to be mindful of what we spend. We can't go on vacations and live lavishly, but we're happy and content. We have 4 kids. We have a nice home. We are able to afford all of our bills every month. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a little bit of debt, you know, about $8,000, but it's nothing awful. Mm-hmm. I know some of my friends
that's a tiny amount of debt compared to most millennials.
I know. And I know some of my friends are $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $60,000 worth in debt. And that's awful. And a lot of it came from their student loans.
It's an awful
feeling. Coming out of college. Mm-hmm. It is. It is an awful feeling.
I feel like we're still pushing people to go to school for STEM. And I work in STEM, and I have a sense for, you know, not everyone is either good at or should be good at STEM. And there actually, as you say, there aren't that many positions.
Like waiting.
Waiting. Yep. And we're pushing people saying, you know, if you just, you know, take out $100,000 in student loans or more in some cases and, you know, get a EE job or some kind of, you know, then you'll have some good work waiting for you. But the companies that I know of that do hire EEs and hire software people and whatnot, they're looking for extremely experienced people.
They're not looking for anybody green.
Either that or they are like a Ford or something like that. And they're hiring H-1Bs because they can pay a lot less to those folks.
Yeah.
And they can even put them up. They'll pay for their housing, and it's still less expensive than hiring
recent college grads.
Right. So it's just the whole thing is largely, as you say, a scam to generate student loans for a lot of schools.
Right. Well, it really is.
I was going to say,
it really feels like Lucy with the football.
Right.
You know, come on.
Yeah. Exactly.
The job will be there this time. Come on. Come on. A little closer.
Yeah.
Nope.
No, I don't regret.
And it's all lie.
I don't regret going to college, but I didn't go into college thinking that I was training for a career exactly. You know,
right?
Yes.
I was an English major, and I was going to be a computer science major. I studied computer science, but I was well supported by scholarships too. So, and I would not have gone. My family would not have sent me if it had been all loans and debt. So, I mean, I did have a little debt. I graduated with. In 1989, I graduated with only $3,600 in debt in student loans. My parents paid for a portion of my tuition, but it wasn't that much. Like by my last year, you know, they had paid down. Their income was not high. They had paid down into it so much that, you know, the rest of it was made up. Every year they made up more. And so, like my senior year, they were only paying a couple of grand, which I didn't feel like was that onerous, you know. And then I only took out loans for a couple of grand. So my student loans were paid off in a few years, and $3,600 wasn't a huge burden.
Amount. No. And you mentioned blue collar work.
Yeah.
And and how remunerative it is, and that it's good work, it's honest work, and you get paid well.
We know from trying to hire a plumber for our house in Saginaw how much the plumber can charge, and we're kind of going, wow, that's gotta good be work. Good money.
yeah, it is.
So, But I think that's a really relevant point because it brings up class.
Mm-hmm.
That class is an issue, and people don't want blue collar jobs because it suggests something about their class. Yep. And they're embarrassed to take the work, or they're ashamed of the work, or something. I don't want to put too many words in people's mouths, but I see it in their reaction to the idea that, hey, maybe your kid could become a blue collar worker and have, you know, a trade job.
Yep.
Very few people are comfortable with that idea. They're even uncomfortable with the idea that their children might go to community college.
Mm-hmm.
That's an offensive idea. Yeah. My own background, right? My parents paid for college, and then I had scholarships.
You went to a state school.
And I went to state school because
which was a pretty good. It was a pretty good state school.
It was. But and then I went to grad school. I had a fellowship and various things like that. And here's sort of a dirty little secret.
Yeah.
The good graduate programs don't cost you any money.
Oh, yeah. People don't realize that you shouldn't be a graduate student if you have to pay to be a graduate student.
Like, if you have to pay, it's a scam.
Something's not working right for you.
Something's not happening.
But an awful lot of people do.
A lot of people.
Yes.
Now, there's something slightly different if it's a professional program, like, say, medicine.
Yeah.
People pay to go to medical school. People pay for... But again, you're getting... It's a trade that has a different class marker. So you're getting educated in a trade. And you generally have to pay to be educated in trade. But again, like trade jobs right now, where there's a dearth of trained employees, if you play your cards right, you get paid for that too.
For people looking who like medicine, I would seriously be considering, rather than, medical school, I'd be considering like a med tech, like an anesthesiology or
any of those things,
radiology or, some of these med tech positions that don't require nearly as much training, but there's still a lot of demand
very
for
well
these
paid
jobs.
And very well. Yeah. Very high demand.
Yep.
Nursing too, although
there's not enough money to pay me to be an anesthesiologist. There just isn't.
It's a pretty high stress job.
It's a very high stress job. Oh my God.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like hurry up and heart attack.
Right. But there are a lot, phlebotomy if you don't.
That's good
if
too.
Aren't grossed out by the sight of people's
right.
blood.
Not as well paying.
Right.
But
there's a lot of med tech kind of jobs.
And also, there used to be a path, starting in high school, bringing you from some very entry-level medical work. And then you see it in the nursing profession where you've got certified nurse practitioners or CNA, certified nurse assistants. And then it moves up. And each level is basically like 1 year of schooling till you get a bachelor's in nursing or a master's degree in nursing. And the very nice thing is that you get to work
while
you're doing that and moving up and moving forward. So you can start that path in high school, or you used to. Right. And I'm
admit we don't know
being very clear on this path currently. But it used to be that you could start in high school, and so you were never behind the eight ball paying for your training.
Yeah.
Yep. And frequently...
And they took that... It seemed like they took that away.
Yes.
With my generation. Like, I didn't have shop in school.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
They took away shop.
Nope.
I didn't have automotive.
No automotive. What about home ec?
Home ec.
Nope.
Home ec was gone. We had no type of learning life skills. They didn't even teach us how to budget, balance checkbooks. My economy class was a joke. We watched movies most of the time. They really did, our education system really did fail a lot of us. I can't speak for all of us. I can just tell you from my own personal.
Right.
When I moved out and I had to learn how to budget, thank goodness I married a man that was 9 years older than me because that could teach me, because my parents didn't think it was something that they needed to teach me because they learned it in school, and my mom went to a vocational school. She learned a trade. My dad learned a trade. They got hired on here in the 90s and the 80s when the computer business was just starting to come up. Mm-hmm. My parents learned on the job training. Why doesn't that happen anymore? Why does
everybody places.
Have to come in with five years of experience out the door?
If you want to learn, so just now, like recently, if you want to learn soldering skills, say, and my company, for example, hires people who can do assembly work, like technical assembly with fiber optics and soldering, what I will look for is I'll go get online and look for a video that was produced by Hewlett-Packard in the 80s, because Hewlett-Packard in the 80s, building machines, you know, they used to hire people with high school diplomas and train them. They would train them up in all their soldering skills. And if you went through that program, you became really good at this stuff.
So this begs the question, at least for me, it just, I got to know, why? Why do we think this is happening? Why, seriously.
Because I think it's because the colleges and the smelt money, and they wanted to, therefore, force everybody to go to college. Like, it was like, it became this thing that you have to do. And they got rid of the vocational, they got rid of the trade schools. And now you have all these kids that are like, oh, I got to go to college. I have to have a degree. Because, like, I was looking myself just for secretary work. I need a four-year degree to do a secretary job. Are you kidding me right now?
No,
it's like everything needs a degree. And it's really frustrating. It's really annoying because a lot of these jobs, you can come in, be learned and trained. As long as you're a decent human being that actually works hard and tries to wake up in the morning,
show up.
I think you should be able to get half of these jobs. I don't know why you needed a degree. And I think that's where a lot of the frustration for millennials comes from.
That degree inflation, right? That kind of degree inflation.
There has been degree inflation at the same time that, like, there's been degree deflation. So, like, you know, I taught a college class at Saginaw Valley State University. And I was pretty horrified by the skill level of the students. This was an upper level class. And I believe now that basically, essentially, college like this has become the new high school. You talked about how high schools don't teach these basic skills anymore. I'm not sure what they teach anymore, because
it's hard to imagine.
We had college students in an upper level computer information science program who couldn't add, subtract, multiply, and divide, you know, who lacked these really fundamental skills. And it was a little bit of a shock. I mean, I'd heard about this, but to see it in, you know, in classes was kind of a shock. So there has been this like, college has become the new high school. And instead of having a diploma as your basic entry-level bar, you have to jump over to get into the working world in some way.
Now
they want a bachelor's degree.
And this is what's really perverse. Yeah. So, like, remember the first year we moved to Saginaw, our homeschooled high schooler was hired to tutor a recent college graduate.
Yeah. This is another reason why
I kid you not,
Grace and I
infractions.
Homeschool. Yeah, is because it just seems like we can teach our kids and
even
casually teaching them, and they wind up way ahead of their peers in the school
and
system.
That's why we don't do public schools at all. We do a homeschool based charter school. They actually use homeschool curriculum. We were lucky to get into it. It's a classical education. It's based on Socratic method, because I know that my kids, I just don't trust the public schools anymore to teach kids what they need to know. And I can tell you, my two younger brothers, who are 19 and almost 18, and they go to this school. My younger brother is doing college courses right now and going to a vocational school, which the school is paying for. He's going to have a job. He's going to have a job doing electrician work as an apprentice, making 18 an hour. There's a swing coming back the other direction where they're like, college is a scam. Like, this is really what the generation behind the millennials are now seeing. If we go to college, we're going to be in huge debt and we're not going to have a job. So I feel like that whole entire, like, I need to have a prestigious job is kind of going away. And it's just like, no, this is where the money's at. Well, money is at these trade jobs.
And I hope that that this, some of the prestige is falling away, or like the air of prestige, and some of that class bias is moving to the side. Because I can tell you, a lot of my peers would never have done any vocational training. Shop was the only thing they did.
It was interesting in high school. You know, I was like, I just taking, you know, the higher level English and physics and chemistry and all this. I was in like the upper level track. You know, but at the same time, they had they had electives. I took electives in wood shop, metal mm-hmm. shop, and home ec.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I also took an elective typing class because mm-hmm. that was like something, there's a class thing there. It was assumed, you know, I think I was the only boy in the class, you know, or maybe one out of two boys because right. the assumption was, people took it. I mean, this was on Selectric typewriters that typed on paper, you know, it was old school.
Yeah.
The assumption mm-hmm. was that you would take this stuff and you would learn to type business letters and papers and documents and how to format footnotes, you know, by hand because you were, mm-hmm. you would go into a secretarial type of work, right?
Exactly.
Right. Training girls for the workhorse.
But basically. It was really useful for me because I liked to write, and also I was doing computer programming. And so to this day, I can like type code far faster than most programmers that I know, you know.
Yeah.
And it's been an incredibly useful skill. And also the wood and metal shop. And there was a huge class difference there. Like I was sort of two classes, you know, mm-hmm. living among working class people, but sort of fallen economically from a family that had been upper middle class, you mm-hmm. know, but so it was a little confusing. I didn't quite know who I fit in with, but I really did like to use my hands to learn how to craft things and build things. That was great, and those skills, you know,
the
people don't get.
They don't get them anymore
at all,
unless someone in their family gives them the skill.
And like we're talking about really basic woodworking, right? You know, sanding and using a saw and stuff like that, not fine carpentry and you know.
Well, I feel like a lot of the hands-on stuff and a lot of the shop and anything like that teaches you problem solving and critical thinking.
Sure. Yeah.
And I feel like that a lot of our generation has lost that. And I struggle. I know I struggled at the beginning going out into the real world. We'll just mm-hmm. call it that. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like my parents did a really good job, I have to say, mm-hmm. but I still felt like I was very unequipped to handle day-to-day problem solving mm-hmm. and basic knowledge. I felt like a little kid walking out into an adult world. It was very overwhelming. And I know I'm not the only one that feels that way. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of my generation is still trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out how to do it. I mean, everybody laughs, but there's YouTube videos on like how to, you know, screw in a light bulb or, you know, like how to do basic repairs around the house.
Yeah.
Because we weren't taught it in school.
Yeah.
Our schools didn't teach us how to do basic life skills. I think that they figured our families were just going to teach us. But unfortunately, a lot of our parents both have either we're in a divorced family or are both of our parents are working. They don't have time.
Yeah, I was a latchkey kid and raised by a single mom. And so, no, I didn't. When I was young, I didn't get a lot of, like, here's how you do things with your hands from, you know, a father or grandfather figure. So
right.
Yeah, and that's hard.
That's very hard. And there's no replacing that exactly.
Not really. Know? I mean, you can learn some of these things later. But, like, the confidence of being able to do things with your hands comes from being a young person and doing things with your hands successfully. Yeah.
That's where it comes from. Not that I want to beat this dead horse, but I see there's this thing with the class issue where, I don't know if you know about this, Angie, but what I've seen so much now with all the vocational training in all the school districts that I'm familiar with, mm-hmm. you know, maybe half a dozen, the vocational training is only available to kids in the bad schools, what would have been called reform school, maybe 30, 40 years ago. So like if you get kicked out of regular school, you're expelled, you can't come back. And now maybe you've got some kind of learning disability and the state has to educate you. They've got a special school.
Yeah.
That they have some name.
For the hopeless.
Like, it's like you usually call it like some an alternative school.
Right.
Like they don't call it like for, it's not juvenile delinquents or some any naughty name.
But it might as well be.
It might as well be.
Yeah.
So all the kids who got kicked out and are now in reform school, they teach them vocational classes.
Well,
so basically,
I find that so sad. That's so sad.
I mean, not that they shouldn't have vocational classes, right?
No, they should.
Everyone should.
Even in the 80s, that was the population of like my shop class largely were the kids who were juvenile
delinquents or had some kind of issue,
troubles.
Right?
Yeah.
And then, but the idea is you don't want to end up in those classes with all the reject kids, do you? Right?
Yeah,
that's the implication.
They were more fun, honestly.
And what, right? And what are you even saying about the skilled trades when that's the dynamic you set up for skilled trades?
Right.
That the only place to get them and the only way to have access to them in the public system is if you get kicked out.
That's
so bizarre and absurd. I can't. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it.
And that's where I'm at too, because you know I. That's what infuriates me, you know, is that there is not really many vocational schools anymore. Nope. They're very few and far between. Trust me, I'm looking in Colorado right now because I'm just like, you know what, with the kids getting older and them getting to school, I'd like to go learn a trade myself. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything happened to my husband, I'd like to be able to do that.
Right.
And it's few and far between. I'm having a hard time finding something. I find it disappointing.
Are there any like women in trades groups in Colorado? There are several in Michigan. So that's why I'm asking. Because usually they will grab you and take you by the hand. Because just like there are very few people in the trades, there are almost no women. Mm-hmm. So any place where there's an active women's group, see what you can find. I'll dig a little bit and see if I can't find something for you. Yeah,
I'm having trouble finding something because I'd like to go learn, you know, either electrician work or, you know, something along those lines, because I can process pretty well with my hands. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a hands-on learner. I can learn pretty fast and process stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know that I hate that everybody thinks that my generation is stupid. And I don't think that about them at all. Mm-hmm. I just think that they weren't properly equipped. And given a clear picture. I think that they were told all these fantasy tales of what their life was going to be like if they went to college, they're going to have a job. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them. I really don't.
Right.
But eventually we need to stop blaming everybody. You have to take personal responsibility for yourself and choose a path that's going to help you to get where you want to go. And it may not be your desired career, it might not be pretty, but if you can afford a nice home and afford the things that you want to be able to afford, go on vacations or whatever, you know what? If it means rolling up your sleeves and fixing someone's plumbing, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing embarrassing about doing that. And I feel like that's where we're at. We just can't, it's just not what we thought it was going to be. We're not going to all be able to sit on our couches and develop video games or test video games. I'm sorry. It's just, that doesn't happen. We're not going to become a Facebook developer. You know, everything that pretty much has been developed is developed. We're not going to become all the YouTube stars. And the reality is we need trade jobs. And it's not, I really hope that the idea that if you're a tradesperson that you failed, that you're a failure, that you're a degenerate,
or just
that's why you're
class.
Working that job.
Just second class. Yeah.
I wish that would go away because it's not true. Some of the most wonderful people I've ever met, and I know a lot of tradespeople because my husband's one, and they're brilliant. They are intelligent, amazing people that will just blow you out of the water. Mm-hmm. But they're so down to earth and they run at a different speed of life. Mm-hmm. They are not as stressed out as white collar people. My dad's a white collar and it's a stressful, you have to be constantly competitive, fighting, trying to get on top of everything. There's so much politics, but blue collar, it's a slower way of life. You just go and you do your job and you come home, you open up a beer and you hang out with your friends, barbecue in the backyard.
There's a lot to be said for being able to actually leave your job when you go home. Yeah. I had a friend who worked for a few years, who did compositing at a newspaper. And this was before it was all computerized. It involved a lot of hand cutting out pieces and, you know, lining them up, like laid out the classifieds and stuff like that. Yep. And it was a hard job. He had to stay late. You know, it was stressful while he was
in
there.
In the moment. Right.
In the moment. But the thing that he liked about it and used to tell me was when he was done and they sent the paper off, if there was something screwed up with this week's, you know, addition or what, there was absolutely nothing he could do about it at this point.
It's done.
So exactly. It was done, and he could just, it was done, you know, no fixing it. So then he didn't have to think about it.
Right. But I know white collar people don't get that luxury. You guys email, you got to come home. You got business. You like, my dad never shuts off. He's always working. I mean, even when we went on vacations, he was always taking business calls. There was never a break. And he worked blue collar before he went into white collar. He's like, man, I wish there's some days I wish I would have just stayed as an electrician because it's exhausting.
I'm not a manager, but a lot of times the projects that I'm doing are with me all the time, you know, and I very often work more than 40 hours and then I am thinking a lot. I do solve programming problems in the shower at home sometimes.
Yeah. You know? I'd say it's with exhausting. Fair frequency. Yeah. Your brain's always working.
Yeah.
Now, so I guess it just depends on what type of life you want as a person.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, the work you're suited for, because it's hard for me to imagine you doing other work. Like what that would even look like.
I was always very obsessive compulsive and detail oriented, you know, as a small child. So whatever I went into, it was going to involve... It probably would have involved electronics or detail work. So you're talking about, you're right about like, not everyone can be a game developer, and people think that like video game tester is a position they can, you know, go up the ranks in or something. And that's not even true.
That's not a thing.
Developers are, that work is brutal and it's highly competitive, highly competitive. Now, what I've sort of carved out a niche, I've been a web developer. I've been, you know, I used to work on, I was part of the .com boom and all that. I've been sort of a research programmer and all that. But about 15 years ago or so, 15. I started getting into what I would call is really low-level programming. So in other words, rather than like, you know, the stuff you download from Microsoft, it's like more like the software that runs on your refrigerator or in your car. Mm-hmm. You know, there is work there actually. And people who know how to do it, there's like, it's kind of like an iceberg. Like people are familiar with like the apps on their phone and all that, but they're not so familiar with like the code in their toaster, you know?
And there's their toaster has code.
And there's a ton. When did that happen? Yeah, like a car radio may have a million lines of code in it, you know, and someone gets paid to write that.
You sound like my dad right now.
We're doing? Okay. Well, that's been an area that I've kind of like have been able to specialize in. And
that's awesome.
When you get good at that, right, you can, in this area, you can find work. In the Saginaw area, I was not able to find work except when I lost my work from home job, except for some like contract testing and stuff, which was really kind of brutal. But
it's the trenches.
Which is why we're back here, why we're back in the Ann Arbor area, because now I'm building these devices with these optical electronic devices that have custom code in them. So that's been
cool.
Well, this is what I'm wondering, though. Do you feel like you have long-term security, though, Angie? Like you and your family?
As of right now, no. The retirement is just, a lot of it's just, we don't have life insurance. We don't have anything for retirement. We have a little bit saved away, but it's pretty much we're living paycheck to paycheck, but we're able to make from paycheck to paycheck. And I know a lot of it, I know what the problem is.
Yeah.
And I know how we can fix it. And that's why we're in the process of, you know, looking at moving somewhere where it's lower cost and, you know, getting off of credit card and onto cash, which is a lot of my generation's problem, is that they all use credit card and don't use cash. So they don't see the money that they're spending. And impulse buys. I mean, impulse buys. They love getting us on impulse buys. And that is...
not just your generation.
Well, you were talking about not necessarily being able to navigate stuff and defend yourself. I feel like the financial world now is so predatory that people do not understand what they're getting into. Like when they take out a credit card or they get a payday loan or all this, they do not understand just how, and they make it, you know, very, very difficult And it's similar with student loans, the way student loans are structured now. They do not understand just how screwed they are once they have signed on the dotted line.
Yes. Right. 15% interest rate, though, that's not bad. Oh, no, that's bad.
That's real bad. Yeah. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Like, luckily, I have a husband that was able to explain it to me, and we have a low interest rate on our credit card, which I think is like 6.43 or something, which is really great.
That's better, than ours.
Yeah.
Not bad.
And our home loan is, you know, we have an interest rate of 3.24 or 3.34 or something. And we were just able to, because we hit at the exact moment when, you know, the market crashed, the recession happened, and we bought then. That was a perfect time to buy. So we found somebody that was able to, you know, take a risk on us because we're first time buyers. But my husband had great credit because he constantly bought, you know, smaller cars with lower loans and paid them off immediately through his bank. So his bank, he had a great track record with them. So these are things that he knew to do that I wouldn't have known to do. And it was just, and just a 9-year period, just a 9-year difference between him and I.
Life experience.
Right, right.
But he knew all of this and he was running his own business and all of this crazy stuff. I'm just like, I looked at him just like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And he taught me. Mm-hmm. He taught me how to do a lot of this stuff. But a lot of my generation just gets credit cards because it's, A, it's easy to do.
It's easy to do.
Yeah. And you don't know what interest rates are because you can't do basic math, I feel like. Some of us are really good at math, but me, I'm just like,
okay, nope. You say so. Well, now, who taught your husband?
His father.
His father.
His father. And my husband was one of those types of person, people that was constantly building stuff and learning how to do stuff. And his brain processes in ways I don't even understand. He can do large sum math in his head, and I don't even know. He's faster than a calculator. And it's because his dad gave him these life skills. His dad owns his own business. They have to be, you know, economically aware of what's going on. They watch the trends. They figure out what's going on. You know, they have to constantly be saving and conscientious of, you know, what, where the money goes and paying your overhead and budgeting. Like,
not being,
kids don't really know how to budget or how to sit down and balance a checkbook. I know that that's a weird thing to say, but we still do need to balance a checkbook, even if we don't use one. You have to figure out what your input to your export is and make sure that you have enough to balance it. You're not overspending.
Right.
Like, can you afford a new car or should you buy a gently used car?
Or
you
know?
Or a horribly used car.
Or a horribly used car. You know.
Or are you walking to work?
Are you walking to work?
To work?
Yeah. What's your situation? You know? For real, what's your situation? Right.
And I feel like, you know, kids are like, oh, I need to have the new latest phone and I need to have, like, you know, the nicest car. And it's like a keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
It's, you can't afford to live outside your means, but a lot of kids are trying to live outside their means. And now we have, you know, I don't want to have kids. I don't want to get married. I don't want to have any commitments. I don't want to have any extra responsibilities. Like, that's why I said I'm definitely the odd man out of my generation because I'm having kids.
I've seen, you know, this. There seems to be, you know, I'm on Reddit and, you know, Facebook and Twitter and... Grace is causing Reddit successful, but I try to follow what people are talking about, and I am seeing this thing among, like, not generation, not millennials maybe, but even younger Generation Z or I don't know, people in their kids in their 20s now,
teenagers and 20 years old,
who are, you know, who are saying, oh, you know, like, are saying, oh, I've made the decision never to have kids because I expect to be poor all my life and it would be irresponsible to have kids. Like,
full stop.
Yeah.
Period. And they're like, hey, I'm 22 and I got a vasectomy or something like that. I don't expect ever to have kids. And I'm really scratching.
I know a lot of my generation have had hysterectomies. I'm never going to have kids.
I'm scratching my head a little bit saying, did you give any thought to, like, all of your ancestors who are the reasons that you're here today?
Thousands of them?
I don't know. It's
thousands of them.
It's just a strange, I can sum up for you
why it is, if you want to know why it is.
Sure.
Yeah, break it down.
So if you look back at World War II, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the worst suffering any generation had ever suffered. Hands down. World War II generation, they came from just coming out of the Great Depression and went right into World War II. And then you had Hiroshima and Nagasaki with Pearl Harbor. It was just the bloodiest. I mean, from war to war to Vietnam, worst generation. I mean, they mm-hmm. suffered so much. So those parents who were about to have kids said, mm-hmm. we will never let our generations, our children suffer the way we did. We'll never let it happen again. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that all these parents with the next generation, which I think would have been my parents, mm-hmm. baby boomer generation,
boomers, mm-hmm.
they protected them from suffering, from everything. Failure, hurt, like from the darkness of the world.
Helicopter so then, parenting. Kind
yeah, of also, like, yes. So is this my favorite theme, that it's the boomer's fault?
No, well, see, I don't think it's the boomer's fault, but I think what happened is that we became so afraid of suffering, having to work hard, having to strive to pull ourselves up from our bootstraps, right? Like yeah. our mm-hmm. ancestral generation, mm-hmm. that you should be able to go to college and work a comfy job and have a white picket fence house and all of this stuff. And reality is only a few people are going to get that dream, and that's okay. And then we look at those people and say, well, why do they have it and I don't? Well, they worked hard for it. That's where the misstep has happened. You think that you should just be given these things. And I know everybody's going to be like, well, would they think they're entitled generation? But there is a sense of entitlement. And unfortunately, this got worse and worse with each generation. You know, don't tell your kids no, you know, participation well, awards, well, that everybody, the there's parent. No failure, yeah. you know,
yeah. well, through the,
we weren't allowed to fail.
One thing that happened after the post-war, period after the post-war boom is you really yeah. did have an easier life. You know, we had yes, economic yes. growth, and that yep. lasted through like about 1972, 73. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And where each generation really was doing economically
better than their parents.
Better yeah. than their parents.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
oh, yeah.
And they
remarkably
did have,
better than their
yeah,
parents.
Yeah. And they did oh, have yeah. greater economic security.
Oh,
and
yeah.
people
oh, yeah.
did.
And I think it's because the parents worked so hard to provide that economic security. And also, you know, there's money in war. I'm sorry. There is.
Well,
and
sure.
And
money in
you
war.
Prosper
sure.
from it.
Sure.
Right. And
so there was also the New Deal economics behind that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that had a huge effect through the economy. And we invested in our infrastructure. We invested in building out the suburbs. We invested in building out people. We had the GI yep. Bill. We invested in educating people and all this going on.
Yep.
But
then it went away.
But it really did... people continued to expect that the later generations would do better than they did. My parents yes, expected right. that I would do better than they have, and I don't have the security that they did.
No,
you know,
no. And we don't. And yeah. we got. And like I said, we have to stop blaming the older generation. We have to start looking at ourselves and say, okay, what can we do?
Yeah.
To fix this.
I can't blame
this?
The boomers.
Well, my parents.
Last time, though.
My parents were pre boomers. Well,
yeah.
My mom's a pre boomer. My dad's, I guess, technically.
So the inside joke is that all of my older brothers are boomers.
Your
I always want to blame the boomers.
You actually have such a wide spread of ages in your family that some of your brothers are actually boomers.
Some of my brothers are boomers,
yeah.
And my youngest siblings. I think my youngest sibling is actually technically a millennial.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah,
there's
I
this
think
wide,
so.
Just widespread.
Just yeah.
You get a whole sorts of conversations at your dinner table.
Yeah, we do. Some of us don't speak. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unfortunate, and I find it sad because we need to stop fighting each other. That's
yes.
the big problem.
Between the
we're
generations.
Right.
Yeah, we're fighting each other. I mean,
I really I do see on Facebook. I have a friend who's like her hobby every day is to go rant against millennials. You know, she's
ranting.
My age and. Mm-hmm. And she blames everything wrong with her life, apparently, on millennials. And it's
right.
the most head-scratching thing. I just like, why
I'm
are
sorry,
you?
I'm sorry, I didn't do anything to her. I don't know her
yeah.
personally. So.
I don't know her personally, sorry.
But
and
I like,
exactly, that's I don't know boomers personally, so how can
yeah.
I blame them for what?
Yeah.
The only person I'm mad at is my government, you know? But again,
amen.
What can I do? What can I do directly that's going to make them change their ways?
Mm-hmm.
Besides praying for them and getting up every morning and feeding my family and taking
yeah.
care of my life here, because that's all I can control. I can't control other people. I can't control the politics. I can't control the economy. But I can control my economy at home and what I do and what I spend and what I give into and what I don't give into. And you know what? Over time, when we stop spending into junk that they're trying to sell us and stop being wasteful with our money, they're going to listen and the economy will change and it will flip backwards if we learn to be mindful of what we do with ourselves.
So when you say when you say backwards, are you talking like relocalizing? What are you talking about? Going back to like a more local, more traditional food production?
What do you mean? Yeah, talk to me.
So for me, I personally think the best economy, and people can shoot me for this, I don't care. Personally, I think the best economy you can do is try and grow your own food. Minimize your cost of what you're spending, how much, you know, you're putting out trash wise. Try and lower the impact you're making in the world. You know, don't be wasteful of your money. Don't be wasteful of your time. Don't be wasteful of other people's time and money. So you really should learn to live as much as you can dependent on yourself. You should have your own ecosystem, I guess. You know, that's why we're working on having our own vegetable garden and our own fruit garden. And eventually we'll have chickens and a lot of this stuff. And I know I'm not the only one of my generation that's doing this, because it's like, yeah, if the government just fell apart tomorrow, we'd be pretty screwed. And I think there's a lot of people that are having that mentality that, you know, our money is tied up in banks. And if the bank system went down, we're screwed. You know,
they're having that internal dialogue, right?
Yeah. It's just like you're starting to see things like, yeah, we're way too dependent on credit cards, banks, governments, government programs. Yeah, that's not good. So seeing that and changing that and going back to, buying local, supporting mom and pop shops, getting away from the big infrastructures, the people that are sucking the money that you're mad at. your money has influence on the market. It does. And you do have that control, but you need to educate yourself. It takes work.
It always seems to me that it's, if you find that you're buying something that's really, really easy to buy and easy to get, you're basically jumping into someone else's trap. You know,
exactly.
Whereas the things that are a little harder to get might require a little more work, might require a little more thought and research
planning
and whatnot. Those are probably the things that are actually going to serve you. You know,
right? But if it's right there, dangling,
cook for yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Is that a thing? Is that a thing with millennials that they never learned to cook?
I never did. Okay. I mean, I learned how to bake. I can bake pants off of anybody. But
a lot of millennials know how to bake.
Why do they know how to bake but not to cook?
I don't know.
I think it's because they hung out with their moms in the kitchen. That's what my mom did. She baked. My dad was the one that he was the chef that cooked. My mom could, I could cook basic meals. Like I knew how to make peanut butter and jelly and macaroni and cheese. And, you know, I knew how to throw some ingredients together in an oven and bake it. I can follow a recipe. I could do that. But like, I didn't know how to meal plan and put together like healthy
the meal planning meals, is all that's all part of the budgeting too. It's really critical.
it is but I think that it's just easier to go out to grab like a dollar burger at McDonald's or just go grab something out of the freezer section and throw it in the microwave. I was talking to some kids around my generation working on the I got to talk to tons of people when I worked that job. And he was like, I don't even know how to make macaroni and cheese. I'm like, really?
Are you for real?
are you joking right now? He's like, no, I really don't. I was like, oh my gosh, that's really sad, dude. Really
is it like a mystery? Like, okay.
That's pretty sad.
I don't know. Because he's still
the directions are on the box.
I know.
And I think there's also this thing, right? Yeah. Where you buy the dollar burger.
Yeah.
And then after a while, that's what you like.
Oh, yeah.
And then you make a burger. You make a burger and it tastes wrong.
If you grew up on McDonald's and someone serves you like a home, you know, like a locally sourced, you know, grass-fed beef burger on a brioche bun with local tomatoes and whatnot, you'd be like, well, this is gross.
I don't know, it's chewy, you know, or whatever your issue is, right?
It doesn't have much flavor. Like, that's what they'll say, because they pack it full of sugar and all sugar sorts of chemicals. Salt.
All these other stuff, right?
Or like, you feel so good.
This is unseasoned. Like, well, what do you mean?
Your taste buds are dead. It's been destroyed by McDonald's.
Just so you know. But that's, people experience what they experience and you find mm-hmm. them where they are, you know?
Yeah. And I wish that there was maybe a little bit, maybe a cooking class, but that they took out home ec.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
I don't know how to do stuff.
That's public money. And I just want to go back a little bit here because the school spending is public money. Those are my yep. tax dollars.
Yeah.
I yep. pay for the school system even though I don't mm-hmm. really use it.
Yep.
Yep.
But I have a vested interest that all those children know how to cook mm-hmm. and do things.
And take care of themselves.
And take care of themselves. Right. I have a vested interest in that. And they don't.
Right. Because the interest went the wrong way. So
way somehow, right.
You know, McDonald's was very keen on those sponsorships and those donations that helped ensure right. that those kids wouldn't learn how to cook.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because... money makes the world go round, and well, they want to line their pockets.
Right. And I don't want to just trash public school. I'd like to trash school in general. But
yeah.
Because a lot of school systems are failing unless they're somehow, they belong to very wealthy classes, right? Mm-hmm. And even in yes, those classes, true. Right?
They're still failing.
They're still failing in some really critical ways.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I have this problem with school not actually teaching what you need to learn as a general problem. And yep. we don't quite get the matchup or the deal that this is going to have long-term implications if we don't teach people the basics they need to know.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, this is the other piece I wanted to go back to. So we made this huge, huge investment in the 50s. As a nation, we invested in
suburban build out,
the suburban build out, and the yep. highway infrastructure to support it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
The dark secret we don't have is that there's no there never was a rational plan to pay for it long term.
To sustain mm-hmm. it.
Right. We never had a plan.
It was not sustainable. It was a one time expense.
Like we make the one time expense and then. There was no like, so we're going to plant some concrete trees so that in 50 years, we can repave all of this.
We can harvest the concrete.
We can harvest. Like no one had a plan.
And don't forget right. to plant more concrete trees.
More concrete trees. Yeah. So you can do it again. Yeah. The idea was that we would just keep building.
Expanding.
Yep. Right. That was
and they're
the
still
only
doing
idea.
It.
Still doing
they're
it.
Still doing it.
No way we can pay for it. No way we can pay for it.
Yeah.
I still hear people talking about how we need to expand the highways to reduce congestion. And I'm like, dude, can we talk?
Take public transit.
Take public transit. Right. Who's going to, and really the question I have, who's going to pay for that road?
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for it?
I mean, it's a problem that I have now.
Don't worry about it.
My 15-mile commute is often a 45-minute drive.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And, you know, and we...
And here you are close to work.
Yeah, we moved to be close to this job, and this is about as close as we could afford because mm-hmm. of the housing situation.
So insane. Anyway. So insane.
No, it's off the rails. We really... Yeah. And we called ourselves hedging our bets, buying a... incredibly cheap house in an undesirable to most, desirable to us area. Mm-hmm. And that backfired when we couldn't keep finding telecommute work,
yes.
which yeah. you would think would continue to make sense. But no, telecommute nope. isn't a thing. You got to be near nope. the job.
Yep, exactly. And it's just a cluster.
Yeah, it's a clusterfuck. So you can curse on this
if you feel like it. You
feel
curse.
The call.
You're welcome to curse.
You can curse.
It is. It is. It's a clusterfuck. I'm sorry. It is, and it's a huge mess. We have. That's why I said I don't really blame the boomers. I don't blame any generation in particular. I blame a government.
Yeah. The only you know what the only thing I blame the boomers for mm-hmm. is not mm-hmm. actually understanding how things yes. have changed before they jump. On
millennials.
Right. Slam.
And that's why I said it's not helping anyone. The boomers need to stop attacking the millennials. The millennials need to stop wishing the boomers would just hurry up and die and that they need to euthanize all of them.
Euthanize all of them so we can have their jobs.
Yeah. So we can have their jobs. I'm like, that's not gonna how it's gonna work. Okay, right. guys. You
that's
know,
not a strategy.
Just saying. That's not a strategy, guys. We need to work together. We need to work together to help fix this country because it's not gonna our government's not gonna fix it. They're having fun ruining it. They're just having fun destroying it.
Extracting the last of the money from the
Yeah.
I mean, like, you guys realize that our country is $14 trillion in debt. Can you wrap your head around that amount? Like,
is that still the moon and back, what, 25 times? That's what I read.
It's once. Not. It's,
we're pretty much owned by China. It's so not a they rational can collect number. On us anytime.
Anytime.
Yeah. It's insane. So we have to stop blaming the other generations. Yeah. We need to take personal responsibility, which I feel like a lot of people don't do this these days. They blame everybody for everything. Mm-hmm. And it's all about feelings and emotions and not logic and not critical thinking and saying, you know what? Yeah, maybe Sally so-and-so, she makes, you know, a six-figure sum. Good for her. If I want to get there, I got to work hard and I got to buckle down. And I also have to be okay with the idea that I may never be there. You know, why do we have this sense that we have to be like each other, that we have to be in this elite category where you make a six-figure sum? You know, those people that make six-figure sums, they really never take a break. They don't.
A lot of them live miserable
lives. I know millionaires.
A lot of them
they're always working.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. I know millennials. They're always working. They're never at home enjoying their home. Mm-hmm. They're always working to make more money. Right. I'm sorry. I don't want that life. I saw that. I'm like, I'm happy with our, you know, smaller, you know, $70,000 income. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just we live life. What it's about.
I do have sympathy because, I'm in the years now, I'm at 50. I'm ought to be approaching like my peak earning years or whatever before they put me out to pasture, assuming I can still function, you know, still my eyes are going, my wrists are going, but you know, whatever. But I do have sympathy for people who have never had much of a sense that they're going to be secured in their career at all. And I think you may see that at play when people are working, it seems, obsessively, because they don't have a sense of security and they do feel like they could lose that progress they've made at any time. And be back to square one.
So. And that's sort of like a desperate fear, you know?
It is a fear.
Right. Or they,
so the question you have to ask yourself is, where do you put your value? Well, is your value in your job? Or is your value in, you know, that you're going to be okay even if you lose? And I think that's where we are. If we lose everything, we're still going to be okay. We'll figure it out. We'll make it work. But my, a lot of that is because of my faith. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends that are atheists, and that's a whole nother topic. That's where a lot of the fear comes from.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no,
you're living life for the moment. Well, and you're not thinking about tomorrow.
And you've got some extended family. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. I have a lot of family.
Right.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And that's, how shall I say? A lot of people don't. Their parents had two kids.
That's so sad.
And it's not just about the cash value. It's about people you can talk to.
People you can talk to.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't matter that they're wealthy or whatever, but, you know, people you can just turn to in a crisis.
Exactly.
And
and a lot of people don't have that. They don't.
A lot of people don't have that. They don't have cousins. Especially
when their families have been scattered all across the country.
Right.
Like mine was.
Or they're divorced, or they only have one sibling, or they're an only child. I really feel for people that are only children. Mm. You know, I couldn't imagine not having all of my siblings, because I'm the second oldest of seven. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love my big family. I love that I can just, you know, hang out and have them around.
This is something we keep telling our kids when we see them fighting and bickering and whatnot. We're telling them, no, really, one day you're going to be grateful that you have all these brothers and sisters. They're like, yeah, right.
Exactly. Whatever. And that's a lot of the reasons why we know we'd be okay, because I know that I can go crash at my brother's while we figure out, you know,
what's next?
He owns his own house too.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Or vice versa. If he needed somewhere to crash and something happened, he could crash with us. I mean, there was times that he needed to hang out with my parents, and we have that capability. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have a lot of broken families.
It's a different kind of safety net. It's a different kind of safety net.
And I think that also affects, too, your success in the future, too. Mm-hmm. And your feeling of sense of security.
Now, people whose brains are entirely filled up with panic over their debts, their basic needs, their fundamental security in life, you know, having a partner, having a support system and whatnot.
Right.
They don't actually have any space left in their brains to focus on, like, what ought to be their career, you know, that part of, that ought to be developing that career. Right. They just don't have any, there's no processing power left.
Right.
And I have to say that my generation is probably one of the most fear-based generations. I mean, I was watching this program, or I watched the 9/11, and it was, I don't know if you've ever watched the full recording of 9/11.
Yeah.
But before it happened, was very interesting. It was all, you know, everything's happy, everything's great, everything's good. And then 9/11 happens, and it's fear, just tons of fear. Every
raw fear.
Any minute we could just blow up and everything's going to, we're going to die. We're going to lose everything. And, you know, you have to, like, it's so much fear in our generation.
Yeah, that hadn't really occurred to me how much that shaped the millennials, because I was already in my 30s.
Yeah, no, we were.
It did.
Yeah, you were in your 30s. I was in my late 20s.
Yeah.
And we saw 13. I was 13 when that happened.
It was a formative event.
Yeah.
Frankly, right.
It was. I mean, think about it. I also was a little kid when Columbine happened. That was like really close to my backyard when Columbine happened.
That's got
to
be.
So now we have, our schools aren't secure. Mm-hmm. Our
cities aren't
land
safe.
Is not secure. I mean, that was the first attack in what? On our soil in what? Like,
well, actually, kind of ever.
There had been much smaller bombings and stuff like
that. That was a big attack. That was a big attack that shook our security as a country. Mm-hmm. And then it's just, you know, you remember when you used to be able to go on airplanes with whatever you wanted?
Yeah,
and
do.
Like good security days. Took like 5 seconds?
Yeah. I do.
Now it's like this.
Yeah, now they just.
Like this huge.
They just sedate you and strap you to a board. And,
yeah. Exactly. And this all affects the brain.
There's
and
a generation
it does.
Of people.
Yeah.
That's been their experience of flying.
That's normal. So you have to
that's
take off
norm.
Your shoes. Yeah.
So I feel we've been overly coddled and overly protected and given this false sense of security. And now we're just like.
And then, it's like, it's both actually, right?
Yeah.
Coddled and given a false sense of security and then shoved out into a terrifying world. Right? Where the schools aren't safe, where your cities aren't safe, and so on.
The news media makes it their business to,
they make bank on
to
that.
Scare you as much as possible.
They make good money.
Yeah.
Fear makes money. It does. Yeah.
So we're always grateful that we don't actually
watch cable TV.
Yeah, I don't watch it. I've turned off of it. I probably am one of the lowest technologically user person in my generation. You know, I finally got a cell phone at 18. So it's just, but it does affect the brain. It does affect the brain. It does affect my generation. Yeah. And I think it's just because when you're in fear, if you know this, I don't know if you know this because I'm more medically minded, but when you are in constant fear and panic mode, the cortisol dumping into your system ruins your fine motor skills. And
I'm all about the cortisol.
And it destroys your ability for critical thinking,
planning
and forethinking and whatnot.
So if we're constantly on edge and constantly panicked and constantly depressed, which I have to say my generation is probably one of the most depressed generations, most anxious generations, and probably most highly medicated generations.
Sure.
Oh Lord. You're not going to make good decisions for the long term. You're going to be living in the moment and what is best for now, you know? So I really feel for my generation. Everybody just needs to pray for my generation. And I don't know whose fault it is. I don't know who to blame. All I know is that my dad told me that there's two types of people in the world. Mm-hmm. People that blame everybody else for their problems and people that take responsibility for their problems. Mm-hmm. He said, which person do you want to be?
What do you want to be in that scenario? Well,
And I want to be one that takes responsibility because it's not going to do any good going around blaming everybody for X, Y, and Z. We need to stop it. Everybody at the country just needs to stop it.
Well, and how shall I say? I'm sorry. I'm not talking into the mic. Pardon me. I do that sometimes. I wonder though, if things will change without anyone. And because, you know, the government commits lots of crimes against us.
Oh, yeah.
And if we never hold them responsible, are they really ever going to change? And that's blame that I'd like to assign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'd like them to be accountable for what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
So that's blame I feel is very important. But this sort of like interscene fighting amongst different groups of the populace.
Yeah.
I just, that's not going to get us anywhere.
We don't have, we really, there's lots I could say about this, but we, you know, I'm standing in front of a banner here we have up on our wall in our little podcast studio, which Grace mm-hmm. and the kids used to carry to protests and marches and whatnot. And it says solidarity forever.
Yeah.
And we don't have solidarity with each other across classes, across generations, across groups.
There's a reason for that. Yeah. There's a reason for that. The government wants to keep us fighting so we don't bind together and kick
them.
Their butts. Yes.
And fight them.
Exactly. Right. They don't want us to do that. I mean, they want race wars. They want class wars. They want feeling wars. That's what they got right now. I mean, they don't care. They're just going to throw it and get everybody fighting each other, because then they're like, oh, well, we can do whatever we want. We can keep spending money. Nobody notices what we're doing.
But there is a sense, though, I wanted to mention about, There is personal responsibility for all of these things, and people should make good decisions and good plans based on their responsibilities. But also in terms of things like, let's say, take the student loans as an example. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If someone their whole life has been sold a bill of goods, and convinced and believed they were making the responsible choice.
This is the responsible thing.
It was the responsible choice. At every step of the way, they thought that. Then they find out, I've had to put my loan in deferment twice, and now it's doubled or tripled. Mm-hmm. And there's like the personal, at some point, the personal responsibility only can take us so far. And we do. It's sort of like with climate change. We can't, there's only so much I can do to save the climate by not burning carbon. At some point, the larger changes have to be collective. Yep. And that's such, any kind of collective thinking has become such a dirty word now. Because if we're all kept in this state of individualism and personal responsibility, we're relatively powerless. I mean, we can be guaranteed that we'll, do our best to maintain good credit and pay our bills on time and all that. But as far as making the larger changes in the power structures and all that, that's requires some collective thinking
work. Work.
Well, and this brings me to my, I guess, my last question here.
Okay. Probably should be winding up. We started late, but having a good time though.
This is all right.
This is great. Great conversation.
What could we do to help? What would help you?
For our generation to be in better solidarity with millennials.
Right. What can we do?
It's just one of those things that somebody's going to have to put the guns down eventually. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to have to stop fighting each other. And I don't know how we're going to do that, because I mean, I've seen such a climate change here in Colorado in just the last 5-6 years that everyone's so angry. Just so angry. And I don't know what's going to help us change ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, if we keep going around blaming each other for everything, I'm just waiting for this to blow up and become a really nasty fight, or it's going to just die down and piddle off. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to become, but it's, you can almost feel the tension in the air. You can almost cut it with a knife.
Oh.
Around here. And it's just, I'm terrified sometimes to drive my kids to school because I get road raged at least once or twice a day. Not joking.
People cutting you off or flipping you off.
Oh yeah. Flipping me the bird, getting in my way, just because I think a lot of it's because I'm driving a van full of kids. It's terrifying. It's terrifying right now going out there because there's just so much anger and everybody's angry at each other, and they're angry at the government, angry that they can't pay their bills. They're angry. And I'm just like, guys, we all just
chill.
I figured that legalization of marijuana would make everybody happier, but nobody's happy around here. I mean, come on, people.
Interesting. Yeah. Is this like in the air? The air is filled with like libertarian rage in Colorado. Is that what's going on?
I don't know exactly what it is, but whatever it is, it's either going to reach a boiling point and it's going to explode, or it's going to piddle off and everybody's just going to figure it out. They're going to figure out their situation. And I think a lot of it's because there's so many people here now. Mm-hmm. The interest rates are so high. The house economy is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. People can barely afford rent. It's a mess here. It's a mess in Colorado.
And that was, and moving to Colorado for, you know, like as recently as 10 or 20 years ago was like, you know, moving to paradise, right? To get away from your urban related problems here.
Not anymore. Don't come here. Everybody that's listening to this podcast, do not
Colorado's
come
full.
Here.
Colorado's full.
It's insane. It's insane. And actually, there's been articles that's coming out that this is one of the least happiest places to move to now.
Wow.
Oh,
we are some of the angriest people now, and I don't know what's going on. But that's all the reasons why my husband like we're gonna move away to the country.
Well, we see road rage. I see the road rage in my commute, and especially if I head. It's less bad if I head west, but it's worse if I head east. Yeah. And it's because in downtown the Detroit area around those communities. Ooh. People are more stressed. Their economics are harder.
And it is. Everybody's stressed.
And they're
stressed.
They're actually like ready to hit each other. And we see this. We just saw an accident recently that someone caused an accident just because
like
they were
rammed
pissed.
The guy.
Yeah, rammed a guy.
Yeah. It's so sad. It's just so sad that we're just so angry at our fellow human beings.
And we're fighting
in reality,
over
they
you
really
know, 10 feet in
done
a lane.
To each other. Right. Yeah,
well, no,
we
and the fight.
Done anything to each other.
They're fighting over 10 feet in the lane.
Who's going to merge one step, one car length ahead in the
it
lane?
It turns into a physical fight.
So, wow.
And it's we've
at least
actually
they didn't get shot.
It's almost like we've dehumanized each other, and we don't know how to interact with each other, and we don't see each other as mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers. It doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter what your political stance is, what your religious stance is. It doesn't matter. You have a beating heart. You have feelings. You're a person.
Right.
When has that lost its value? And that's where I'm trying. Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm not so worried about economics right now. That's not going to even fix itself. And so we can fix out our personal problems with each other and get together and learn to just coexist.
To appreciate people's basic humanity.
Basic humanity that we can just, first of all, we can disagree with each other and no one's going to die. And
we shouldn't.
And that's okay. Yeah. It's okay to disagree. That's a beautiful thing. We all have different backgrounds. We all have different beliefs, but we should be able to talk so that we can understand where each other's coming from. Mm-hmm. And secondly, that we can still be friends as long as you're not a jerk. That's my only qualification. As long as you're not a jerk, I don't care if you have five heads. I don't care. I don't care
a lot of black heads.
I mean, if you came from like the worst background and you're like an ex-convict and you're not a jerk, I can still be friends with you. Mm-hmm. It's fine. Yeah. You know, just don't be a jerk.
I
don't ask
for
much in friends.
Jerk.
It's hard. I find it hard.
Yeah, I find it hard
to not be a jerk.
It is. But
I do what I can.
Yeah.
But it's okay. You know, if you're still a jerk and you're able to just say, hey, let's throw back a beer and let's hang out.
Oh, I'm good for that.
I miss throwing back a beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, come on. That's just basic human things. And also, we all need to learn to laugh more. What happened to senses of humor?
Oh, yeah. I try to maintain that on social media these days, but a lot
of people can't take a joke. Not be so serious. Life's short. It's too short to be serious.
I do think that left or right or politically, wherever you are, if you're like an activist type person doing whatnot, it's really easy to forget to do anything fun.
Right.
Or to make anything fun. It's really easy to make it all so obsessed about the problem solving and the organizing and whatnot that you don't, like you said, crack a beer and socialize and have a laugh together.
Right.
Was it? That's not my revolution.
Those are the things
dancing.
That brings us together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that brings us together as humans, is our ability to enjoy good food together, to enjoy a good laugh, and to go out and go have fun, whether it's dancing, whether it's just, you know, going and playing frisbee golf in the park. You know, those are the things that bring people and communities and places together. Honestly, really, food does. Yeah. Food brings
food
communities
definitely,
together.
Definitely
like
does.
Nothing else. Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
And this is something we've lost. We've lost this somewhere along the way.
Yeah. No, it's like
our ability to be together.
Every organization I'm with, it's like a liability issue. They can't serve food.
Oh, yeah. Get together for a meeting and they don't
There's
have
no food.
It ought to be like a church basement potluck.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But instead
it's
like,
so surreal because, 20 years ago, that's not how we did things.
Right.
No. Right. And now you have kids that are walking around with their faces in their cell phones. They're isolated from each other. So it's easy to hate people when you're isolated. You don't have connections. You don't have relationships. Mm-hmm. It all goes back to relationships. Mm-hmm. You want to know what's wrong with our economy? We don't know how to relate to each other. That's it. There you go.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right.
I think that's a good last note right there.
I think that is too. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight. So
now this is awesome. No, it's been good to get to know you a little better, Angie.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Grace, for having me, and thank you. It's Paul, right?
Paul.
Yeah.
Okay. See, aha, I have good memory.
All right.
Thank you guys so much. This was enjoyable.
You've been listening to the Grace and Paul Podcast. Check out the show blog at podcast.blogspot.com, where you can leave comments, or search for the Grace and Paul Podcast on Facebook or YouTube.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.